Sure. Thanks for coming. And as we get started, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors. There's a number of students who've contributed data that we'll be presenting here today. Sort of within the pedagogical circles, we've been interested in the reduction of iron for a long time. We've recognized this in the description, soil morphological descriptions, and the recognition of redoxymorphic features. And these have been used a lot in developing a variety of interpretations and assessment for a whole host of uses. So within these circles, we've been focused on iron for a long time. And then even more recently, with the focus on hydric soils and the National Technical Committee's technical standard, that also, their focus on reduction is focused on reduction of iron. And so that's really the sort of the impetus behind what we're going to be talking about today. It's been recognized for a long time. There's a number of sort of essential elements that need to be present if you're going to get reduction of iron oxides. We know it's a microbially driven process. You have to have saturation, which reduces the influx of oxygen into the system. We assume the microorganisms that are necessary are going to be present. They need some sort of an energy source in order to metabolize and use the iron as an electron sink. And they need to be warm enough in order for the microbes to be active for these things to be happening. I want to first focus on some data we derived from the field and then focus on some things we've done in the lab. So first we want to focus on this site, sort of in the backbone of the Delmarva Peninsula. It's a depression, small Delmarva Bay, and there's a transect that we ran in and out of this. It's about 30 meters long. This shows the topographic cross-section, sort of a brief depiction of some of the major horizonation. There's about a 15x vertical exaggeration on this. So these are fairly subtle landscapes. What we did is we took iris tubes, which are basically PVC tubing that are painted with iron oxides, and we inserted them along this transect at 1 meter intervals to try to capture the continuum across the landscape. And then they were inserted for 4 weeks and then withdrawn and analyzed, and then a replicate set was put in for another 4 weeks. These represent the images of the scanned tubes when they came out. And these were inserted around March the 20th, came out approximately 4 weeks later. And this green line represents where the water table was at the time that we inserted the tubes. And this is sort of a frequency distribution for over the 4 week period, 21 days cumulative, the water tables were at this level, 14 days there, 7, and that was the highest point at which the water tables existed during the 4 weeks that the tubes were in place. Now what we can see is that there were some what I'd call rather modest removals of iron oxides from these iris tubes at a few places down here where it had been saturated probably for 3 weeks or longer. But it's fairly modest. You might expect, especially with these high carbon-rich horizons, that it'd be more than that. But if we look at the temperatures at which that were occurred, these measurements were made nearby, that the temperatures during this period range from about 6.5 to 11.5 degrees, they average close to 10. So it was somewhat on the, let's just say, chilly side. However, when we came in and we, during the month that followed, the water tables were a little bit higher than they were before, but there is dramatically more removal of iron oxides from these iris tubes across the landscape. And principally, we think this is because, as we'd expect, as we get later in the season, the temperatures are getting warmer, and the average temperature here is about 3 degrees higher than it was, 3.5 degrees higher than it was during the previous month. So from this, we know that saturation is important, and people have understood for a while that the duration, or how long the soil is saturated, is an important component to this. The presence of carbon in these OA horizons and such is important, and so there's both the quantity of carbon may be an important factor, and possibly also the nature of the carbon. How labile is the carbon pool within those particular horizons? And though we know that generally, as things get warmer, microbes are going to metabolize more quickly, what actually are the temperature functions that are related to this, and how can we describe those? And are there also some other factors that may be contributing to this? In order to answer that, we moved into the lab, and we developed or created a number of these mesocosms, which are basically 1 liter containers, and we saturated them with water, and we measured the onset of reducing conditions during a number of approaches. We inserted 5 replicate platinum electrodes with a Calomel reference electrode, and we monitored those continually. I do have to say as a caveat that those measurements were made with a low resistance voltmeter. And if you've heard me say anything over the last couple of years about doing this, this is a little problematic, and it's the last study that we ever did taking measurements the wrong way. Okay? But those are the data we had for this particular study.
The EH is wrong,
yeah. So, and then we had a pair of little mini iris tubes that were installed. We had to look at the removal of iron from the tubes, and we also used these as wells where we could extract pore water from the system and using alpha-alpha dipyridyl document whether or not there was any onset of actually mobilization of ferrous iron. We used six different soils that ranged in carbon from about 0.5% organic carbon down to almost 7% organic carbon. And we placed these in incubators as we monitored these. We used six different temperatures that range from about 2 degrees up to 17 degrees C. And these were all in duplicate mesocosms. We made the comparisons. We chose to make the comparisons against the technical standard line of the National Soils Hydric Soils Committee. We could make the same comparisons using the ferrihydrate line or the goethite line, but this is supposed to be an empirical line that is related to the actual reduction of iron oxide. So that's what we chose to report. This is just an example of the data that came out from making the EH measurements. And these are all plotted relative to the technical standard. So this is a time sequence along this axis, and this is the EH relative to the technical standard. So zero represents the technical standard. So as long as they're above zero, it was considered oxidizing. Once it dropped below zero, it would be reducing. So we watched, you know, once we saturated the system, at what point did the system become reducing based on the EH measurements. And then we also made alpha-alpha dipyridyl measurements from the pore water, where we were looking for kind of a modest or a sort of a slight weak reaction. This is the data over here. So once we observed the onset of pink colors in the pore water, we noted that, and that was how long it took for reduction to begin using that parameter. So if we look at the onset of reduction, the days to cross the technical standard line on this axis as a function of temperature, each of these lines represents a different soil. And we notice it's a very pronounced temperature effect, that as things get warmer, it happens more quickly. There's also a very pronounced soil effect, that these lines are very distinct from one another. And the soil effect is more evident at the lower temperatures. It becomes less evident as you get into the warmer temperatures. However, if we look at the soils themselves, the red line and the yellow line represent the soil with the highest organic carbon and the lowest organic carbon of the whole set. And so what becomes clear is that although there's a soil effect, in this case it's not simply a function of the quantity of total organic carbon in these soils. And I should mention these are all A horizons that we sampled. But there were other factors. In addition to the carbon, these soils came from a variety of locations, some from the inner, some from the outer coastal plains, some derived from crystalline rocks in the Piedmont. Some were agricultural settings, some were wooded wetlands. We had to go to the agricultural settings to find A horizons with low enough carbon to kind of push that end of the spectrum. And of course, the textures vary. So there's a number of other things that could be confounding what we're seeing in the soil effects. When we look at the onset of the alpha-alpha dipyridyl reaction, this is similar. In this case, it's the length of time, the amount of number of days to record the pink color as a function of temperature, again, with each of these lines being a different soil. We see some similar observances. There's another very clear temperature effect, and there's a very strong soil effect, that these lines are distinct from one another. And in this case, when we look at are plotting each line represents the temperature, and a single soil represents, as a function of carbon. So all the lines stacked up represent one soil at various temperatures. And in this case, we see that there's the total organic matter does seem to have a pretty dramatic and direct effect on how long it takes to develop the reducing conditions if you measure by alpha-alpha dipyridyl. And that's very much in contrast to what we see when we were using EH measurements. They were much less direct. So if we compare these two different approaches, on the lower axis we have the length of time for the EH to cross the technical standard line. On the y-axis, how long does it take to get the alpha-alpha dipyridyl reaction? And you would think that they, hopefully, ideally, they would correspond to one another. But this line represents the one-to-one line. So if they were the same, they would all fall there. Clearly, there's a disparity here. There's a lag. And the further that this deviates from the one-to-one line is the longer there is between the onset of or the EH crossing line and the onset of the alpha-alpha reaction. And they can range from as little as about 2 times the value, or this, in this case, the slope's almost 8 times. It takes about 8 times longer to develop the alpha-alpha dipyridyl reaction. So that's a little bit surprising. But there clearly shows that there's some discrepancy between these two approaches. So if we look at this amount of time, the lag, the actual lag time between crossing the, you know, the EH line and the onset of the alpha-alpha, we see that at warmer temperatures, this lag time is less. And that's probably not surprising, given the fact that the we know these are all microbially driven, but especially sort of the reduction of iron oxides to produce ferrous iron in solution, that's clearly microbially driven in here. And we would expect that as temperatures warm, that's going to happen more rapidly, and so the lag is going to be less. Again, if we plot these as a, where the lag is a function of the carbon content, so the soils, again, are sort of stacked up. The points represent the soil here. These lines represent different temperatures. The lag is lower as you get higher carbon content. And again, since this provides the energy that's available to the microbes that are required in order to reduce the iron oxides, that this is, again, perhaps not greatly surprising. And then finally, we just want to look very briefly at the removal of paint from the iris tubes. We have this is a tube that was then scanned and then converted to a binary file, which we analyze using image analysis. And in this particular case, where we have this is a temperature, the quantity of paint removed in each line represents a different soil. We see a very strong temperature effect here. In fact, at temperatures below about 10 degrees, with the exception of this, these couple of soils here, there is essentially no removal of the iron paint. This is, although these were in for 4 full weeks. There does seem to appear to be some effect of organic carbon on this removal of the iris paint. Although they're not directly associated, we find that these represent sort of the higher carbon group, and these represent the lower carbon group. But the other thing that we ought to notice here is that these two, which are sort of distinctly different from the others, came from a different physiographic province. These are the ones that were derived from the crystalline rocks in the Piedmont, where the others were soils from the coastal plain. And so there may be something mineralogically, something related to the iron itself, that may be affecting, you know, how these soils are behaving. So, to try to summarize and wrap this up. First thing we notice is that when we're documenting or trying to document reduction in soils as defined by the reduction of iron, we seem to get different answers depending on how we're measuring that. And we need to recognize that. We need to address that somehow. We need to consider how we're going to understand that. Or I'm not sure exactly what the reason for that is at this point. We notice, of course, that the duration of the saturation is going to impact when these observations are made or when they become reduction, become reducing. You know, we document this over time. We know the longer they go, eventually they're going to become more and more reducing. That's not surprising. But there's also other factors, other soil factors that are very important in terms of what's the speed at which reducing conditions are going to develop in these systems. Temperature is one of the big players. At least in this setting, within this range of temperatures that we're looking at, temperature seems to have a pretty large impact on how quickly the soils become reducing following the impact, beginning of saturation. And while organic carbon itself, total organic soil organic carbon, seems to have an important role to play on some measures, especially like the development of a reaction with alpha-alpha dipyridyl, with ferrous iron, perhaps with the iris tube, as well, it's less clear that it's there's a direct relationship on EH measurements. And so there's probably, there may well be some, in fact, we think there are some other soil factors that are contributing to this. And it's clear that there's a number of these things, particularly carbon in the landscapes and the duration of saturation, that are very closely tied to landscape parameters. And so this is how this all ties back into the landscape. And the thing to keep in mind is just that as we try to evaluate this or estimate this or model the onset of reduction following saturation, that we need to consider some of these other factors and these parameters into the model. So with that, I'll say thank you.